everyone. This is Carrie L., and you're listening to Carrie L.'s HeartLink Show. And I have something very special planned today, so please do stay for the whole hour. We're going to have one of my best friends, Dr. Larry James Stevens, is going to be on today, speaking about Celestial Fire, his new book, and it's a Naval Aviator's Spiritual Odyssey. So I'm looking forward to that, and we'll go to that in a moment. First, take a deep breath and allow the sacred love to flow through you now. And the blessing of the day is from the Gayatri Prayer. Let us focus on that effulgent light from which the whole universe is projected. May this inner sun enlighten our minds and hearts, and may we awaken as that light. All right, so good things are coming your way. And you might want to check out my website for one thing. It's heartlinkinstitute.com. I've got some great events planned. And if you're in the Oceanside, California area, please do join us. And I have online classes as well. And I certainly would ask you to consider the crop circle cards. I have created those, and back in the early 90s, along with the help of spiritual guides, and it's using 64 of the crop circle glyphs, which are very powerful, using these wonderful designs from the fields that have occurred over the last three decades, especially in England. So, and I've led groups there many, many times. So I've had some really great experiences, and I talk about that in my book that accompanies the crop circle cards. So if you're interested, please do go to my website, heartlinkinstitute.com, and we will get started with our wonderful guest. I'm so excited. He is so incredible. I have been reading his book, and wow, it's terrific. In fact, he has been all over the place. He has his doctorate, first of all, in science of spirit studies, and he's a former naval aviator from 1962 to 1970, and decorated Vietnam veteran, a Western Airlines pilot, vocational school owner or director, a Nevada spokesperson for the U.S. presidential candidate, Ross Perot, a quantum heart shift facilitator and life coach, as well as current Shock Institute faculty member. And back in the 70s, he also was a reserve UFO field investigator for the Tucson-based Aerial Phenomenon Research Organization. So he has been involved in some incredible things. And welcome to our show, Dr. Stevens.
Hey, Carrie L. What a pleasure to be here, and thank you for that glowing endorsement. I'll try to live up to it.
Okay. Well, you know, you really have had an adventurous life, and you've, in fact, from your book, you say you're a former Vietnam period warrior who has exchanged his bear guns for bear hugs.
Much of this adventure has been kicking and screaming, so I don't know how much of it I volunteered for in a human sense, but yes, it has been entertaining.
Well, and in reading this, it's a life guide for the 21st century. It's powerful because you really do bear your soul, and I don't know if that's where the name Soul Man came from, but boy, I know that that's many... us call you that, and your friends, and you have really been involved in some interesting things. And in fact, the fiction author Dean Koontz has written a wonderful, glowing testimonial calling Celestial Fire fascinating. So that's a great report. Also, you had a special reviewer from the Reader's Digest, or Writer's Digest book reviewer, who gave your book the highest rating, a 5 out of 5, and that's for writing quality and content. So, and he called you a real-life Fox Mulder a real-life Fox Mulder for us. And the U.S., the X-Files fans, yeah. So can you tell me what he is talking about?
What he was referring to is, of course, book 2 in my life guide. And by the way, this is the book I've been looking for all my life, to try to get some semblance of understanding and who we are and how we function and what the heck are we doing here and are we really from Earth or not and all of those kinds of questions. Because initially I didn't feel related to any Earthlings, especially those folks that I call parents. I knew I wasn't related to them. And so I kept searching for my brethren and sistren. So with this, rabid curiosity about life and unwilling to accept status quo, which got me in trouble a lot. I got kicked out of a lot of Sunday schools for asking too many questions. it eventually led... And part of this had to do with meeting Lockheed's two most famous test pilots. I talk about this in Chapter 5. Tony LeVere was the U-2 chief pilot on the U-2 program, and Herman Fish Salmon were both workmates of my father, who was in experimental aircraft design and flight testing at the infamous Skunk Works of Lockheed. Meeting them at age 9 and having a fascinating dialogue there. I was determined to get some answers. So when my turn came and was accepted into a flight training program, I was eager to get airborne. And during those Vietnam periods, in fact, you have one of your guests that's logged on today, contacted me and said he was going to be logged on today, was actually a witness and was part of that soul man creation that came from some crew members, actually, back in my flying days in Vietnam, and he was aboard the infamous Fireball flight. Now, this was one of the stories that the reviewer was referring to, where I had an energy encounter. A fireball entered our aircraft at altitude. We were in a blinding electrical storm. It was over the Pacific. This is late 1967, early 1968, with a parent, and I say a parent because I let people judge from the story whether it was guided or not, but apparent purpose and intent to take out a weapon of mass destruction that we were carrying at the time. We were carrying two MK4 chemical bombs, 4,500-pound bird cages, and the gentleman that's online here right now was actually the cargo master that loaded these bombs on the aircraft, Wayne Williams. And Wayne contacted him here about a year ago, found me on the Internet, because he was concerned that he might have been exposed to some dangerous chemicals there that were creating some health problems for him at the time. I was looking for some evidence of that. But the fireball, after it barely missed me, I described the details of this in the book, and discharged into the bomb, totally incinerated. I mean, it took it out of action. It burned everything that was burnable, just left the husk. And the cylinder, fortunately, that stayed intact, that contained the chemical, although for a long time, with all the fireworks show and vapors and fumes, we doubted we were going to survive it, because we were told if there was ever a leak in the canister during flight, we were denied clearance to land anywhere in the world, and that meant we'd have to ditch and we'd be dead before we got to the water anyway.
Wow.
So this remnant of this explosion went right past Wayne and headed to the back end of the aircraft and discharged into an APU unit, and he was worried about it starting a fire back there. That was one incident that couldn't be explained by St. Elmo's fire or basic physics, because this energy ball, after doing a fireworks show in the cockpit and coming aft, bounced off metal decking. The flooring of our DC-6 four-engine transport was metal, bounced off it three times, never discharged until it got to the nose of that MK-4 bomb where there it exploded. So what was that all about? I had a researcher contact me later who said he was experimenting with ball lightning, and he believed that that's what it was, a phenomenon of ball lightning, which you know quite a bit about in your research into the crop circles and what might be involved in air creation. But in whatever energy it was, and I know that's a question for crop circles as well, it appeared to have some guidance or intelligent design. And after we reported this incident, by the way, Cariel, as you know from my book, our crew met the infamous Men in Black. And what a joy that experience was.
Wow.
That was a lot of fun, and we can talk about that. There were other incidents, however. I had four engines that quit on takeoff in QB Point, Philippines, or 150 feet off the deck in a left-hand turn, just brought the landing gear up, hot, humid day. Part of the 7th Fleet was in. We had a large class cruiser filling up the cockpit window. All four engines quit. We only had four, and we had no procedures for four engines failing. We practiced one engine out, two engine out. We even practiced three engine out. Plane wouldn't fly with only one engine, but we could extend the glide ratio. We had no options at this point.
Was this?
What I did next terrified the co-pilot and the flight engineer even more. And I had to be told about it later because I had no conscious awareness of what I had done.
Ooh, okay, all right, slow
I had
down.
Saved our lives. So there were many stories like that in the book, and that's what the reviewer was referring to.
Wow. no wonder he called you a fox, what is it called? He called you a Mulder.
Yeah, I guess you weren't an X-Files fan, right? A real-life Fox Mulder, he was that...
A Fox Mulder, okay.
...investigator in, for paranormal phenomenon in that TV series X-Files.
Well, okay, so we're going to go to the phones at some point during the show, and I just want to prepare people because I know that you're going to have some excellent questions come your way.
I love questions.
And I do too, and there's a lot going on in your book, and we want to cover as much as we possibly can. But at the at about 4:30, we'll accept the calls, and I hope Seth is listening to that, and we'll screen bring in the calls when they come.
Well, these are the things that launched me on that 30-year quest of paranormal study and the UFO work and all of that. So that was the motivating influence, trying to get some rational answers to it all.
It really awakened you to much more than just I guess normal life. It certainly is paranormal sounding.
Well, there was something going on. It was larger than me. It was something larger than my little human pea brain could contain. And eventually, I had to surrender to that in order to really get the answers I was seeking. And that was 30 years later, after another intervention experience in an intersection in Escondido, California, where my life was saved from certain auto crash death. By, once again, a force entering and taking over some semblance of control to prevent me from entering that blind intersection.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a while.
So you had, at that point, okay, so basically the ball of lightning, or whatever you want to call it, St. Elmo's fire, I know is the reason why you called your book Celestial Fire. But this specific ball seemed to be different from the regular St. Elmo's fire, the one that you're talking about. And this happened...
Oh, right, and we usually give that static electricity properties, and it should have discharged as soon as it touched metal. But this phenomenon did
this?
Not.
Was this during the Vietnam War?
Yes, it was. We were over Pacific taking these weapons to a secret location.
And so... I know that there have been incidences where these UFOs have intervened and shut down missile silos and so forth. And so this sounds like one of those events where they really were that there might have been some kind of intelligence behind this ball of whatever lightning that you saw. Describe it. I guess that would help people to understand what were you seeing?
Well, of course, my job, I feel, is just to report the experience the best way I can recall it. without telling people what they should believe about it, let everybody make up their mind.
Yeah,
but
that's
the
probably good.
Fireball was about the size of a large grapefruit or small bowling ball, and it's pretty well captured in the cover of my book. Anyone who goes to my website, they'll see.
Well, let's announce your website. Go ahead.
Yeah, soulmanlarry.com. And there's many excerpts from the table of contents there, stories and sample chapters and so forth that you can read directly right there. Don't miss the Fun Zone, by the way, which is available from the margin of my homepage there, because if we're not having fun with whatever else we're figuring out, we're paying too high a price. But the fireball, like I said, was throwing out all kinds of multicolors and was spinning, and it just hovered in place. It came through the windshield. Didn't do any damage to the windshield, but it came through and hovered over the throttle levers.
Were you at the pilot's seat at that
point? We were flying double cruise then, so we could extend our hours, and I had just been awakened from the crew bunks that are directly behind the cockpit in the navigator's foyer section, had my pants halfway on, when I heard two loud, "Oh, shit!" coming from the cockpit. And the window or the curtains were partially open. And here's this fireball, and the pilot was on duty and the flight engineer were up in the front. They're both trying to get away from this thing. And then it came aft, and it came my direction. And I was trapped. I couldn't stand up. I kind of pulled my legs up and held onto the bar of the bunk ahead of me, did kind of a high bar routine kind of thing, and it just dipped and just barely went under my legs. And the bomb was just a few feet to the left of me then. It just passed under me and discharged. But its shape, as I said, was about the size of a bowling ball, multicolored, rainbow-colored, throwing out all kinds of sparks. Mm-hmm. It didn't make a lot of noise until it hit the bomb. And then there was
directly?
All kinds of metal twisting, snap, popple, crack. It was just a devastating explosion blast that we all felt we'd bought the farm there. It was all done. You know, I had the life review then, Carrie L. The real life review where
well,
I just said,
go...
"Man, if I get another chance, I will do better."
Lucky it didn't go for you.
Kind of going through the checklist and feeling like maybe there's some things I could have been doing a little better with the life I had and be a little better person. And,
it disabled the bomb, are you saying?
Yeah, it took it out of action. The couriers that never flew with these loads, only carried this load twice, made us nervous. And of course, my good friend Wayne here that's listening was responsible for tying the load down. Everybody triple-checked the tie-downs because we were going into electrical storm anyway. We were going to be knocked around. And we felt very uncomfortable. The couriers would deliver it. Hand us the top secret manifest, would never get on the plane with it, and said, "We'll meet you on the other end," kind of thing, if you make it, and walk away after telling us we were denied landing clearance if anything went wrong during flight. So, we were nervous about carrying them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they were open. It was like they called them a birdcage. They were open. You could see the relays and the counters and the meters and the wires and the canister in the middle there that held the chemical and all of that. So, you know, they weren't sealed to the point where you wouldn't have to look at it. So we were uncomfortable carrying them anyway. So now what was interesting this night is that there was a lot of St. Elmo's fire building up on the outside of the aircraft.
I remember you talking about that, Larry. You were saying how you played a game of telekinesis with that.
Which I didn't tell anybody about because I knew they'd wrap me up and send me away with the white coat on. But we used to joke and kind of have a little wager on these little balls that would roll around the wing, and they would go underneath and come up the other side, usually golf ball size, occasionally as big as a tennis ball, a little St. Elmo's fire, and static charge, and they're harmless. They never came in the airplane. And we'd try to count how many seconds, we'd guess how long it would take for them once we disappeared over one wing before it would come up on the other side. We'd assume the same ball and that kind of thing. And I started playing with it with my mind, and I started trying to direct it and reverse its direction, and I found this one ball responding to my will. And it kept doing it. I kept moving it back and forth and setting the timing, and I was winning the bets and all of that. And so I said, "Man, what is going on? I must be losing it." And I just kind of broke off the game and didn't say anything more about it. But yes, it seemed like I was in tune with this energy, and we were connected. And so that would form a basis for my experimental philosophy and investigation the rest of my life, this idea that everything is energy and we are connected to it, we are it, we are the evidence of it, whatever we call it, and there's a relationship. And now we have the whole quantum field now, which is, of course, getting into that level of verification of subatomic particle communication and the parallel universe idea, explaining the string theories and the singularity being penetrated now. We're now going out mathematically past the Big Bang. So there's a lot happening in the quantum area to more or less kind of explain how energy works. So I'm excited about that new research that includes Newtonian science but is not listed to it.
Well, your book your book is a wonderful tool for people. It's actually divided into two parts.
Yes.
And you have like the first part kind of being autobiographical, and then the second part giving the tools and equipping people so that they can become more in touch with self-reflection and being more third reality, in touch with that level of consciousness. Would you explain what you mean by you have the first and second and third reality level people?
Yes, thank you for that. Yeah, my research motivation was whatever I discovered to have it be practical for the here and now. And this is why I was taking this empirical approach that it had to fit into a five-sensory box to have validity, to be real, and that but more importantly, it had to have some here and now meaning for us that we can use, not just surrendering to some esoteric void and standing on a street corner with a robe and tulips spouting love. So I wanted something more tangible than that. So what happened is through the course of this investigation, and finally my mountaintop samadhi, kundalini, and so forth, election night 1996, that's in my book, and we've talked about where I had this huge download, was in response to that search for practical application. And then soon after that, I started associating with those who had a structure, had been working for years on a structure, an avant-garde psychology, an inclusive understanding of how we function as human beings in ways we've never had before, and it fit perfectly into the model that I had experienced but didn't have words to explain. And holographic
You literally had a kundalini experience.
I did. It was like holding on to live electrical wires, levitating off the bed and so forth in this little Spartan room I was in at this mountaintop retreat, but without the pain.
And this was back in 1996.
It was election night, 1996, exactly 4 years after I made the concession speech for Ross Perot's presidential campaign in the state of Nevada, and I had come to the realization right then of the futility of looking for outer solutions, like Lone Rangers coming in on a white horse, to deal with inner challenges.
Well, that's up right now for a lot of people. I'm telling you, some of us are really waking up to, got to let that one go, because we are not really having free elections any longer, and if we ever did. And it is time to really start depending more on ourselves.
That's a very astute observation. In fact, with the science of holographic psychology in the first level of first reality, subject-object language model, we name person, place, or thing, he, she, or it. And second reality, the I am process language model, is more humanistically oriented, and we have a self, an I, an ego, a person, analyzing potentials, and that's the first time we have the potential for true free will. Because in first reality, we're walking around thinking we're choosing when in fact we're only responding to our inner conditioning, that which we've accepted or bought into from so-called outer authorities, and we didn't even have, didn't even have any discriminating filters in place where we could look at any input and say, well, clearly that doesn't apply to me, that doesn't serve me, I'll let that one go. We're very young, we don't have those filters, so whatever the parents say, whatever the teacher says, whatever the older siblings say, it's the gospel, we accept it, And I don't know about you, but some of that stuff that I heard as a child wasn't that supportive.
Yeah. It
wasn't that encouraging about all the things that I could do and accomplish. Talk
you know,
about
Gary, this show is about the ascension process. And so you have really just honed in on exactly the reason why we need to be really clarifying for ourselves what's really going on in reality right now.
And that takes a reflective capability, Carrie Ellen, an ability to neutrally witness the relationship between our old belief, I call them old in a linear standpoint, but we're living them now, our belief acceptances, our bias, our habits, our self-image, our habit patterns, and our current life experience. So before we can be CEO of our own life, our own authority, rather than just taking it from having somebody else tell us how to think, feel, or act, we have to realize the role that we play in our human life experience. And that's a liberation that human beings have not in general have. So it's an exciting time now. You and I have talked about this, how there's an explosion, an evolutionary waking up that's occurring right now where people, the whole self-industry, self-help industry came out of this, which is relatively new, last 50 years or so, where people are deciding they can make changes in their life from within rather than just electing somebody else to do it for them or pounding on the environment to be different, trying to make others over in their image, cloning others, you know, in their likeness and so forth. So,
well, it really is awakening to a new, greater reality, that there's much more to this, what really matters, you know, than the 9-to-5 job or, you know, sex, money, and power.
Yeah, what we're calling it in HP, holographic psychology, is awareness of awareness. So beyond the awareness, beyond the learning behavior capability that higher mammals have, the ability to sit back and understand why we're aware, to understand what Socrates and more significantly Plato was talking about in the allegory of the cave as far as how we determine reality and how there's levels of consciousness. At each new level, there's a new experience with the same world facts. Facts don't change, but our interpretation of those facts is liberating. It still includes the previous level, doesn't make it wrong, doesn't make it bad, but shows how it's limited.
All right, so we've done the first and second, and first is kind of reactionary,
what you see
is what you get. You think, you only think in terms of, you know, very concrete ways.
You make me mad, sad, happy, or glad. You're the reason I'm the way that I am, so forth and so on. That's first reality. Second reality, we get into that reflective capability, which is more humanistically oriented. If it is to be, it is up to me. And third reality now is the inclusion of the transpersonal realm, where we recognize that awareness of awareness, which is one's eternal nature awakening to its unlimited source. So it is in third reality, the we are, that intellectual concepts of oneness become a core reality. Now, the complexity of each level of understanding, which includes and appreciates all previously awakened levels, doesn't throw the baby out with the bathwater in this science, provides a structure to understand our divine and internal or absolute nature. So in the transcendent realm, space and time is included. Experiential life is appreciated. But we know that we're not limited to that, that we are something even larger than our physicality.
Well, the highest truth,
something we can test in our own life.
The highest truth for me, anyway, would be that I am, you know, I'm one with all, and that I am God, and I'm certainly emulating more and more as I become more awake that level of consciousness in some fashion, because we were made in the image of God. Now, I put the God word in here because I know it's in your book.
Well, it's dog backwards, so, you know, we revere dogs.
and you speak to that, and you speak it, it's not as a preacher, you're not preaching, and that's the beauty of your book. It's like giving, potential to people, the awakening of who we really can be if we want to be, you know, if we really become more and more in touch with our inner self-reflective understanding.
Well, great question and observation, Carrie L. Again, yes, my orientation is that we're not broken in need of fixing, that we're in the exciting role of actualizing our pre-existing wholeness, our pre-existing potential, and we're waking up in shifts to that which we already are. We just chose to take on a little amnesia as we parachuted into Earth here to have this grand adventure that we volunteered for and have co-facilitated so that we could appreciate opening the gifts of life one at a time. Just for the sheer intensity, that kind of a laser beam focus that is more than the blast of all there is coming into us all at one time. So to me, it's the difference between sitting on the porch, looking at the mountain view, and climbing the mountain.
And it's a balancing act that you talk about between the left and right brain. You want to share with us what you mean by that?
That's the center core of that all-inclusive study, a delineated structure explaining human soul mind and the evolutionary process that brought us to this unprecedented threshold of remembering. And that we call holographic psychology that was initially coined by California's Dr. James Pottinger and his research staff. I'm now director of education for that research, and he's a former protege of Ernest Holmes, some people might know as the founder of the science of mind philosophy. But in this understanding, there is a emphasis on simultaneous integration of both the left and right hemisphere. We call this process location of comprehension, or in German it's called Festuhlung, which is that, it's a German word, it means it's simultaneous integration of left and right hemisphere. So we're not talking about naming persons just about he, she, or it, but we're more into that inclusive appreciation of all aspects of life, and we're looking at the intuitive, cognitive, and the visceral intuitive, and the rational cognitive working together. So we're not bashing and smashing and trashing any part of the human personality or the ego. We're just bringing that ego consciousness into harmony with our larger self, our capital S-E-L-F, which is that transcendent nature, which appreciates variety. Now, most of humanity, coming from fear, makes a difference in the badness. You know, you're with us or you're against us, and evil ones over there and white hats over here, whereas nature coexists even with what seems to be the most violent life forms out there. I used to laugh about every time I picked up something to eat and turned on TV to a nature channel, something was eating a wildebeest. You know, wild dogs, hyenas, lions, something. Yet I observed there's got to be an awful lot of wildebeest, and there are. So human beings get involved anyway and change the formula. So what I'm saying is that the red flower doesn't say to the yellow flower, you're wrong, you're bad, get out of the meadow. It appreciates it. It incorporates it, and uniqueness is celebrated. So this philosophical science is about celebrating the uniqueness within each human being, that special calling, that spiritual DNA that works in partnership with its genetic-based partner.
Well, and the left brain, just so people understand what the left brain means, some people may not, is the linear thinking, the reasoning, and the logical side of the brain.
Right.
And the right is the intuitive,
I call it the tab A and the
creative.
Slot B brain. It's the engineer brain. After the designer brings the concept, the right hemisphere channeling of an invention, the engineer goes to work to make it, you know, to make it work.
So anyway, the right brain being the creative side,
right.
It is incorporating the two together that makes the thing happen. Is that what you're saying?
And for the standpoint of experiential life on Earth, the most peace and harmony and joy and goodness and wholeness, prosperity, creativity, and love comes from that integration. We're no longer at war with ourselves. And I don't know about you, but I found pretty early on that I was my own worst enemy. I would beat myself up more than anybody else could possibly do. just from self-recrimination, for feeling like I wasn't enough, wasn't doing enough, wasn't getting it. And I now realize that, of course, that was a self-image issue that I was dealing with there.
So the holographic psychology has helped you to heal those childhood wounds, is what you're saying.
Well, it's provided not only a structure to explain our evolutionary process, our waking up, but also how to tap into our potential. And, of course, you do a lot of this work wonderfully in your self-hypnosis facilitations and training and so forth, where we invite, once we have that reflective capability, we decide, hey, this habit, this belief is serving me, but this one over here is not, and I keep defaulting to it during times of upset, even though I don't want to. I seem to sabotage myself, having mood swings and so forth. What's going on? Well, we got that old program still running. So when we have processes that we can use, tools, we can bring that into our subconscious mind where suggestions can be received, and we can replace a non-serving with the serving. Now, very important to understand here is why affirmations themselves generally don't work.
I agree, yeah.
Affirmations said in the conscious mind, the what we call the beta consciousness, and hypnosis and so forth, and mind dynamics work. Syllable mind control uses that term as well, and so does NLP. But in that particular level, we can say I'm rich, I'm handsome, I'm prosperous, and the skeptic, the critic back there with the self-image issue says, cancel, you're not rich, you're 2 months behind on the mortgage bill, that's real rich. You're not beautiful. That's why you're thinking about liposuction, you know? So that it's arguing with us all the time because it's not being accepted. So until and unless we can open up that belief center, which is deeper than the beta consciousness, where replacements can be accepted, change in behavior and life experience are unlikely to manifest.
Mm-hmm.
So tools to accomplish that, such as the ones that you're facilitating and wonderfully using, are also part of our research.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm going to now give the phone numbers to call because I know you all have some interesting questions to ask, and Dr. Larry Stevens is our guest here on Cariel's HeartLink, and he will help you through whatever it is that you need help with. He would be happy to do that. And the numbers for the U.S. is 877-876-5227. For Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And for international, it's 530-876-3222. And Larry does attunements and helps you with replacement and helps your spiritual DNA. So let's take him up on getting some help if you would like.
And that spiritual DNA, when I say that, I refer to the human life blueprint created by what we can call higher source intelligence. And it's a function of involuted teleology relating to design and purpose within nature. So it works with our in collaboration with our genetic-based DNA partner.
So it's more on the ethereal level.
Well, you could interpret it that way, but it's embodied to the degree to which we can accept it. In other words, our potential pre-exists. The inventiveness within us is always there. Our next grandest vision is waiting for us to invite it forward. But as long as we're going through life defending our ism, defending our definitions, making all other truth, wrong, and bad, and different, and so forth, we're not open to that channeling that you and I demonstrate and practice all the time because we're open to it. We're open to receive. So it takes that willingness of inclusion, of acceptance, rather than my God or my truth is bigger and more righteous and tougher and better looking than your God or truth.
You really got into some very interesting aspects of especially the right brain when you started talking about the Akashic records in your book and past life a regression. And I'm fascinated by the story of where you were able to get help with an issue, and you know, you don't have to go into any of that, but if you tell us, how did that help you, and do you believe, and I know what the answer is, but what do you think about reincarnation?
Well, great question, Carrie Ellen. The answer depends on what level of consciousness we're addressing at the time. So always take that in consideration when someone is asking the question, because I don't want to be inappropriate for them. I don't want to take away anything that's working for them, but when they have a question that might say, well, is there anything more? I'm having some doubts or some issues about this, and we have some new options to explore. I consider myself an options broker, so I don't have an agenda of you know,
it's
trying to convince anybody of anything.
Words.
So we'll start with that. That chapter in my book, which was a very powerful chapter, and that story, the visit to the Sioux Nation that came as a result of that past life regression, was an effort, part of my 30-day spiritual odyssey, by the way, that I was guided on for healing and enlightenment, that was choreographed wonderfully. The best travel agent in the world couldn't have put it together any better, and yet I just showed up. You know, I was just intuitively guided. I surrendered to it and partook in it and ended up on that mountaintop I told you about earlier. So with part of that was to get with a past life, not only a regressionist, but she was also editor for a organization that used past life regression professionally, psychologists, psychiatrists, and others. Dr. Brian Weiss, somebody you know, I'm sure, was in this organization from Florida. The use of it was to heal a remaining, lingering feeling that I wasn't worthy of love in my life, that I had somehow dishonored my life at the beginning by being a taker, by being self-absorbed, hedonistic, insensitive, uncaring about others, just focused on my own pleasure and so forth, and I had to lay on enough hands and heal enough others to earn enough karma points so that I could be deserving of love. And even though I had done a lot of personal growth work and so forth and healed much of this, there was still some little vestige or element that believed that it could be diminished by the actions or behaviors of others or events and circumstances, that somehow somebody could wound me by taking love away from me. So out of that fear, then, I continued to have a little wall or a little barrier. And that opportunity presented itself where I came in with that intent, that motivation to heal that, and this wonderful process was revealed to me where I was taken back to a past life in the Sioux Nation where I had to witness my entire tribe, and apparently I was a spiritual leader of that group in the Lakota region of the Dakotas, and watched the entire tribe be slaughtered. The details are in the book, but the whole experience of that helped connect the dots for me, because what came out of that was a blindsided hit from an invisible black force that came at the end of this encounter that I recognized as the demon I was wrestling with from my own head all my life. And as I wrestled with this, as I turned my cheek and said, okay, you're not going to blindside me again, I'm going for it, I'm not going to live in fear of you any longer, this dark matter of energy turned into a white dove and said, thank you, thank you, thank you for releasing me of my curriculum so that I may rejoin the collective love-based energy. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I realized that this was a monster that I had created within myself, and there was no reason for me to not embrace love fully and completely, and I was no longer in fear of it ever being denied me. So what I'm saying is my intention, this is my belief on it today, that it wasn't the past life regression itself that created the healing. It was my intention, my belief in the process providing an opportunity to heal, and that's what manifested. So what I help people consider today is how powerful our belief systems are. Now, you got a guy coming on later, just a fantastic researcher in this area, Bruce Lipton, who's a biologist turned psychologist, has written a book on the biology of belief, where he demonstrates conclusively, most people feel, that we have enough power in our belief system to actually change our cellular structure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then Dr. Emoto's work on water, mass consciousness used to clean up polluted water, turn it into pristine alpine water, just with the power of love, focus, consciousness. So there's a power here that we are, whence we come, that we are, that we can focus with, use in our life to make changes all from within. So that's the process within my book. As far as reincarnation goes, once again, at one level, it's a wonderful explanation for what we're doing here. In other words, a serial life thing where we continue on, so forth and so on, and picking up more and more experience and learning lessons and learning to master life and so forth. At another level, at third reality level, it's the same concept as forgiveness. At one level, forgiveness is very important in moving out of the victim, but at one level, another level, forgiveness becomes moot when we realize we never were a victim. We just thought we were a victim. We were living like we were. The larger truth was that these early childhood or whatever experiences provided a wonderful curriculum for our life to work through and empower ourselves so we could be having this conversation right now at this part of our life. And I don't know about you, but I got these things that would qualify for child abuse. And today I embrace them. I'm so grateful for them. As I said to my mother so many times, I don't know if she totally forgave herself for some things that she inadvertently did, you know, secondhand smoke and different kinds of things that were torturous to a young asthmatic child. But today, I'm just knowing how perfect those things were. And I got the green bean story in 69, which was another torture deal, that I just laughed so hard when I wrote this story this time because the comedy in it.
It was really quite ridiculous, and it was proven to be a bad method. Why don't you tell us that story?
My mother was frustrated over the fact that I wouldn't eat green beans when I was a child. She decided green beans were important to my health, so she went to see the pediatrician, who was some reverse psychology guy experimenting in reverse psychology. He said, "No problem, I got the solution. You give him nothing but green beans. Morning, noon, and night. You know, he doesn't eat anything else until he's begging for second helpings." So that was the deal, you know. And so my dad's shaking his head over in a corner, but mom kind of took the charge on the discipline side of things. And, well, you know, we got into about the second or third bean fest evening, and I just couldn't handle it anymore. So there was an eruption, let's call it. And I was dispatched to my bedroom, and I didn't have to eat green beans anymore. The story is hilarious, the details of it and so forth. My sister had to sit there and incur the blast between parents after I was sent to my bedroom. But this idea, and eventually the doctor's book and the red floral arrangement that got dumped on by my rejection, let's put it that way, of the green beans got tossed in the trash, and we were done with that. But it was just so funny to later observe how beliefs determine our behavior.
Yes.
Mom was convinced that this is okay. She accepted that.
Yeah.
It's the doctor. He's got fancy initials before and after his name. It must be the truth.
Yeah.
So she just kept pounding on me, although parts of her were saying, "This doesn't seem right. This doesn't feel right." So what I suggest to people today, and as they learn to become their own authority, listen to this internal sensing. I know there's one level of psychology, behaviorism, that says that the intuition is an unreliable data source, can't be counted on because it doesn't come up with the same thing every time. But I know you, having your psychology background, are open to realize that it's a developed ability to open ourselves to that intuitive sensing and to take that into consideration. We're not throwing out the rational mind. We're not dumping that part of ourselves, but bringing that in, that simultaneous integration, so that we really can be firing on all cylinders.
Well, and you know, maybe you've actually opened some doors and stimulated some minds today. Suppose that there is a listener out there who's ready to step up and take responsibility and turn their old belief into a new perception. How would they do that? How would you tell them to go about creating a new vision of potential life?
Well, that's the first key, is what you just said, being willing to take responsibility, not just for actions under the old carrot and the stick motivation technique, but for thoughts and feelings as well. So once a person decides, you know, what if I do have something to do with my current life experience? What if it isn't just the fault of or the cause of this thing I got an evidence list that I'm blaming or crediting? So once that's been established, then all kinds of inventions will start coming into that, through that intuitive sensing. And all you need at that point is a structure that can help process those a little bit. For those who value structure, some don't care why something works, they just want to enter the experience of what works. So depending upon a person's orientation, they can find themselves and they will be led to a self-help system or whatever, and with their new motivation or new intention, they will gain benefit. And they'll just go from one to another that way. Now, I'm happy to help them, because my process, my job, my book is all about that whole entire transformation, because I reveal it at all levels within myself. I don't come from any ivory tower. I'm not pontificating, not telling people what they should do. I'm simply explaining what wasn't working for me and what's now working for me and how I got there. So for the value that, and a lot of it is in story. So even if a person doesn't care about the holographic psychology explanation of who we are and how we function, that avant-garde philosophical science, they just want to go to the stories, much like parables, that will bring them along as well. So soulmanlarry.com is a place where they can start on that. And I also wanted to offer something special to your listeners today, if we have time to do that now, or if you want to do that later, in regards to a very special guided visualization and meditation tape that I could make available to them free. It's $20 on my website, and it's for purchasing my life guide book as an additional premium.
So they'll, if when they purchase your book, if they say that they've listened to the show or mention my show in some fashion.
Yeah, your name or Heartlink.
Okay, Carrie L. or Carrie L.'s Heartlink, whatever.
In the note field. It's a warehouse page on my website is where you order the book and other products. And they'll see the description of this paradigm shift awakening dialogue, and also the transformation meditation, which incorporates several tremendous visualizations of transformation. Rainbow induction, a timeline visualization, we realize just how far we've come in our life when we aren't sometimes aware of that, and other powerful processes to help bring us into our potential. So it's a very, very powerful tape, and it's available free for your group just by mentioning Carrie Al or Heartlink in the notes field when they order the book.
Excellent, excellent.
I also send them a power bookmark. It's a fun little thing I've come up with a simplified secret of success in life. On the back it says, dance like no one is watching, sing like no one is listening, laugh, joke, play, love like no one is judging, and thereby enjoy, claim your intended earth mastery. It's not really that complicated when we really get down to the core. And there's several affirmations on the front. I'll just read one. It's one of my favorites. To blame ourselves for past behaviors or things not yet accomplished is like blaming an acorn for not as yet being an oak tree. We're in the exciting role of actualization of a journey. Life's not about any final destination. How can there be any final destination for an eternal being? So be in the journey. Embrace nature's example. And that's what I always recommend and suggest to anyone that comes into my world.
Excellent. Well, we just about have time, about 5 minutes time, to have, you know, the visualization you've just mentioned, and then we are going to be finished. So go ahead, and I may give you a 30-second notification as well, if you want to go ahead with the visualization.
Well, sure, I'd be happy to, and we're just doing this spontaneously. Let me say, as we lead us into a supportive visualization, that I am no stranger to loneliness and heartache. I know what it's like to be in a party and surrounded by guests and party favors and feel like I'm totally alone on the planet, an alien on the planet. I finally figured out that that wasn't caused by a lack of party favors, but my own self-image perception and the fact that I felt different and that for that uniqueness was not being celebrated by me or within anybody else. So, once again, acceptance in place of tolerance, cooperation in place of competition, and we are in the great and exciting loving business instead of battling for control over our life. So as we take a moment now to turn within and make a gentle releasing, what I'm knowing for every person who's hearing these words, either live now or will be hearing them in the future, that you are absolutely magnificent, just the way you are. You're not broken. You have never been broken. You are an exciting, very special, unique human being. There is no one like you. There never will be one exactly like you. So when we get confused about why people aren't understanding us, what are we not understanding about our uniqueness? We are unique. Why should anyone understand us just the way we understand ourselves? So let us rejoice in that uniqueness. Let us celebrate that uniqueness within others. And every time we feel a button pushed within us, a knee-jerk reaction into a moralistic judgment, say thank you, thank you, thank you to the universe. Something for me to turn within and see what that reaction is connected to that I can look at reflectively and heal and breathe love and replacement into that discord. So
wonderful.
That's what we are here as co-facilitators to do. That button-pushing person is as much of a soulmate as anyone we might light up with in their company. And we embrace that. We appreciate the challenges. We're not here to suffer or to be in pain, but we appreciate feedback, the diagnostic opportunity within temporary pain, and we choose to look at it and learn from it.
Oh, thank you, Larry. That was beautiful. Thank you. And I really appreciate your coming on my show. It's you. You're a breath of fresh air, and I'll have to have you.
But you inspire me.
and we've got to go. I just want to announce that next time we will have Stanton Friedman.
Wow!
And I'm looking forward to him. Of course, he's one of the most recognizable names in ufology. So we are going to have a great show, and this has been wonderful too. So, and you've been listening to Carrie L's HeartLink. And my guest has been Dr. Larry Stevens. And his website is Soulman, what is it again?
Larry.
SoulmanLarry.com.
.com.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.